Welcome to Stepping Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon.
Everybody, my name's Sue Supriano, and I'm really happy today to be speaking with John Zerzan. John Zerzan is an activist and author. We are in Eugene, Oregon. He's from Oregon, and is most recently written some books called Elements of Refusal, and also Future Primitive and Other Essays, and also Against Civilization, Readings and Reflections. So we're going to be talking about anarchism. And John Zerzan has a doctorate from Stanford and is, as I say, been involved many years in many different kinds of activism. And John, anarchism has just kind of come back into the vocabulary in the United States. And is also getting a very bad rap, and people, including myself, before it was more explained to me, have a very distorted notion of what anarchism is. So maybe we should just start right there.
Well, the anarchy movement, kind of true to a certain stereotype, I guess, has a lot of different takes or emphases. And in terms of theory and in terms of practice, I guess what you're referring to is militant, action-oriented black bloc type of activities. I know that that's been a matter of discussion. My own feeling is that there's less controversy about it, at least relatively less. I'm sure there's no unanimity or consensus, but it seems that given the nature of the juggernaut, the direction things are going in such a clear and even accelerating direction, that I think it's fair to say that a growing number of people feel that more militant activity is necessary to be effective, and I think we're all trying to find ways to do that. I mean, we could discuss Seattle or Quebec City or wherever it is, but I think we're in the context of a movement that has returned after decades. You'd probably agree with that, Sue. It's been a while since there were such interesting times, and it seems to me that it's real anarchy informed. I mean, there's a great big spectrum of different outlooks and different groups and different tactics, but they all seem to be somewhat anarchistic or anti-authoritarian. I remember back in the 60s, it was really pretty Marxist in terms of what was available, and the anarchists, as far as I could see, didn't play much of a role. Now I think that's a lot different.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what the average person thinks of if they hear the word anarchy is chaos, just chaos. And certainly with the huge demonstrations that there have been, as you're just mentioning, Seattle, Quebec City. Seattle was against the World Trade Organization. Quebec City was against the FTAA. I'm not thinking what another agreements between these corporations, basically, that put profit even more clearly above everything else, that say that anything that interferes with profit is illegal. That's basically what these agreements about and what the big demonstrations have been about that many of our listeners may not have even heard of, because they're often, unless you're listening to me or somebody like me, they're often barely covered in the corporate media, unless they're right exactly where you're right exactly where they're happening. So there's lots of misunderstandings and lack of information about these things. But often the anarchists have been blamed for what small amount of violence there's been. I always figure that they could be actually plants by the government, because there really hasn't been much violence by demonstrators. Most of the violence has been by police in these big demonstrations. But in any case, that's how it seems to me that the word anarchism has come up, to the extent that it's come up at all for the average person.
Well, frankly, Sue, I feel like there hasn't been enough violence in the sense of property damage. And I think there's a very key distinction there to be made, which is that property damage as a tactic is not violent in the basic sense of violence or violation of people or other other creatures, other life. Certainly there's the cops, as you can consult history or extremely recent history, and there's no doubt about the violence that they will unleash, as you say, when the system is threatened or curtailed in any way. This is the collision of globalization, which with indigenous cultures, with the natural world, with, I mean, you name it. I mean, I think that's why, that's certainly one obvious reason why there is a movement. There has to be a movement of resistance, or else we just get rolled over. You know, there's no end to the toll. Obviously, I mean, hundreds of species going extinct every day. The oceans dying. Not to mention in the social sphere, the rampant estrangement that's going on. I mean, some of these things are so horrific, and yet. And they're in the paper, but I don't think we dwell enough on those, if I could mention that a little bit. For example, kids now at the age of 2 are being doped up, are being drugged into compliance. Ritalin in the schools, all that is nothing new, but, you know, we've got just incredible things going on. There's school shootings and, you know, tens of millions of people on Prozac. The fact that the teenage suicide rate has tripled over the last 30 years. I mean, this is the pathological manifestation of a system that's just doesn't have any answers and doesn't have any health, any healthy direction left. And I think people, I hope anyway, at some level or another, are starting to see that, you know, we've got to rethink the whole thing and start over. And to me, that's what anarchy is questioning all the institutions and trying to carve out a qualitatively different way from the bottom up. Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess, John Zerzan, that in your books, which I haven't had a chance to read, just got up to Eugene here and heard about you, and I'm really very happy to meet you. But I know that you question this whole idea of civilization and technology, and maybe we could you could talk about some of that, because I think it seems that you go further than a lot of people do.
Well, this kind of questioning is spreading, it seems to me, and for at least a couple of reasons. One, I think, is the fact that as this crisis deepens and spreads, you are led to find a way to account for it that involves more than we used to think it was all about. In other words, a lot of things that we took for granted in terms of institutions and so on, things that were just treated as banalities, now I think it bears thought in terms of, are these things part of the problem? In other words, how much of these things can we take for granted and still account for why things at such a deep level are going south? For example, technology. That's one clear, you know, the neo-Luddite tendency now. I used to be in, I certainly include myself, there was the idea that, well, technology is fine in itself, it's neutral, it depends on how it's used. Now I think there's more awareness that really isn't so, that technology is really the embodiment of any social system. at a given point. In other words, you can't really separate the technology from the rest of the social order. It involves certain values and certain choices. And so I think there's a greater rejection of the whole technological order as part of the problem, part of the reason for the alienation, for the destruction of nature and all the rest of it.
Well, of course, there's an awful lot of people that are very thrilled about the internet, for example, since technology. I mean, there's a lot of things we could talk about technology, but the internet, and people say, well, it's just a tool. It depends how you use it. And, of course, it's used to really keep track of people, to really be a big brother-like thing. And it's also used to connect people, and we couldn't have built as big a movement as we even have, probably, without the internet. So what are your comments about that, John Zerzan?
Well, I think you're right. It's one way to look at it is a contradictory. Well, some people would say hypocritical approach. The anarchy movement, especially the primitivist part, of which I'm a part, does make use of the internet because you'd be at a disadvantage if you are not linked up that way. I'm not so sure it's absolutely essential, but it, no doubt about it, there's a lot of communication and coordination and so forth via the internet. I think it's possible to use it without succumbing to, in other words, without embracing the whole system. I mean, there are a lot of things that we pretty much have to use, but that doesn't mean one isn't aware of the total system that they're a part of. For example, one basic question is, where does the technology come from? I mean, sometimes I think we forget how much drudgery and toxicity, things like that these things rest on, that they come out of. And so what is the toll of the technology in various ways, and is it really such a benefit? I mean, it's, you know, questions like that, which yeah. I think are open questions.
Yeah, they sure are. What do you mean by a primitivist? Say more about that.
Well, that I think gets down to even deeper or even wackier, it depends on how you look at it, questioning technology. In other words, the logic of civilization, civilization is what I'm talking about here. Are we not seeing the playing out or the fruition of civilization itself, meaning, among other things, or at base, domestication? These are institutions. For example, another one is division of labor, another thing, another banality, another thing we took for granted. But as they play themselves out and develop, the fruits of these things, I think, are easier to see. In other words, it's not just the latest manifestation that's the problem. And I think, by the way, I think that's the same. I think that's also true with globalization. You know, what I'm afraid of there is that it's kind of a buzzword. And some people stay on the surface when, you know, globalization is nothing new. In fact, you could say that globalization started with civilization. It was always a globalizing, totalizing kind of thing. It didn't have a whole global, totally closed system as it is now, but still. But anyway, getting back to civilization.
I think it used to be called imperialism, too, some of it.
Right. There you go. And that's kind of out of favor, but... you know, instead of inventing new terms to try to lure people in, I mean, it's the fundamentals that I think we have to keep in mind. One of my favorite lines is Freud's dictum about, he said that, I think in Civilization and Its Discontents, that the fullness of civilization will mean universal neurosis. You know, and I don't think it was noticed all that much, but isn't that exactly what's happening? I mean... You know, I mean, it's because when you curb freedom and eros, I mean, you get really unhappy people. And he thought it was a good bargain because he believed in work and culture, and you can't have that without this suppression. But after all, is it really paying off? I mean, is the final bargain worth it? There are different ways to pose the question, but it does seem like more people are actually they're actually problematizing civilization itself. And that sounds very far out, But, you know, even a couple of years ago, over the space of a couple of years, let's say, it's starting to sound less far out, even though I grant you that that's pretty, you know, that's asking for a lot to try to question civilization itself.
Yeah, it is. I can really understand, though. I haven't read your books, but to me, you know, civilization, people act like it's like so superior. And the whole putting down of and using of this word primitive as something stupid and less good. But civilization has brought us these bombs that kill everybody, this incredible technology. And I was just reading a little while before I came to do this interview with you about the number of Iraqis that got killed in 100 hours, 150,000, I think, and something like that. That doesn't seem too wonderful. I mean, it's horrible.
Uh-huh.
And all the people in prisons and the sophisticated ways of torture and, you know, it's at the very least a mixed bag.
Yeah, the underlying repression is becoming more obvious. And maybe to make this, bring this down to earth just a little bit, in terms of the anarchy movement, anarchism, the traditional workers' movement, Spain, and we're speaking here in July 2001, 65 years ago, this month was the beginning of the Spanish Civil War. When you think of the history of, or to call it classical anarchism from the 19th century, I think this is kind of a new development, or maybe if this isn't too arrogant to say, a deepening of the original anarchist theses. And what we're seeing, by the way, in the anarchy movement is the syndicalist part, the workerist part, is somewhat giving way to the more primitivist or green or Luddite or anti-civilization, these are kind of interchangeable words, part of the thing. And I don't think it's one or the other. It shouldn't be one versus the other. But there's really, in various places in this country and in other countries, there really is a movement in the primitivist direction. It's not just a wacky theory. I mean, yeah. It's people are embracing it, especially young people, I think, are finding this, that it really is instructive and it's worth thinking about.
Well, I think we need to know what it is, because I think we still haven't really defined anarchy, and you're referring a little bit, I think, John Zerzan, to things that the average person isn't acquainted with.
Oh, thanks, Sue. Yeah, I'm just jumping off into... Well, to me, anarchy is trying to identify and get rid of every form of domination. I mean, the anti-authoritarian impulse, that's in most general terms. And so what does constitute domination? Which are the institutions that need to be undone? And as I say, I think that it's a bigger list than we used to think. I mean, I, among others, took for granted all kinds of things. But the anarchist movement is a mixed bag, and I'm not trying to speak for everybody else, that's for sure. I mean, I realize there are a lot of different tendencies, and I've been at some different conferences in recent years, and there's always a lively discussion, and I don't think any of it should be thrown out. But I think what is in the ascendant in terms of the anarchist will against domination is trying to locate this in the contemporary world and within this crisis to try to look deeply enough at ways to overcome it.
So when you say primitivist, what is your picture of how you would like things to be, and you and others?
Well, one part of that for some of us would be a goal of an extremely decentralized life world, which would involve face-to-face community. And that's, of course, the opposite of what's happening now at such a rapid pace. To get rid of the mediations, and that would get rid of a lot of the problems, it would also imply dismantling physically a lot of the system, but to me that's the ultimate goal. And I think in some ways it goes all the way back to the model of band society before civilization. And one of the inspirations or the kind of benchmark things that has been inspiring is the literature that gives us a brand new paradigm, not brand new, but as a paradigm or as a general set of the picture of the way it was before civilization, before domestication. And this isn't extremely widely known, I'm afraid, but there has been a really big revision of how it was. In other words, let me just put it in like a sentence. Not that there aren't details that are under dispute, but that there was no organized violence, that there was a lot of gender equality and autonomy, that there was a lot of leisure time, things like that that you don't usually think of it even now. I mean, the stereotype of life before civilization is real precarious and brutal and benighted and all that. But there's an ideological reason. I mean, that's one of the factors in wanting us to see it that way or kind of enforcing that view, if you will, because, you know, the system is always telling us that outside of it, there's nothing but death and, you know, you got to have cops and you got to have all of these things that keep us in line. You know, you always hear this, at least I always hear this when people are asked about anarchism. Well, in so many words, maybe not this strongly put, but, well, wouldn't people just kill each other? Isn't it human nature to just, you know, want to go out and just grab everything? And, well, no, I don't think it is. But within this system, you have bad behaviors because that's what the system produces. Mainly, it doesn't come down from heaven. It's the product of a very destructive social system.
Right. Well, and I guess most people would accept that American society encourages individualism and competition. And a lot of people think that's fine.
Right, and that's one of those things that isn't it human nature to want to have things and want to enforce your will on others or whatever it is. And you know, these are conditioned responses or behaviors. That certainly is not the way it used to be for a couple of million years. And, you know, referring again to the literature of archaeology and anthropology, even before this paradigm shift of a few decades ago in terms of the general way that we would apprehend what was it like before all this, egalitarianism or sharing is the central ethos, the central way of band society or foraging society or gatherer, hunter, or life, whatever. Mm-hmm. Terms, these are all interchangeable terms. And there's no dispute about that. That's not anarchists making this up. This is just the orthodox. This is in the textbook. So, in other words, if people were sharing for a couple of million years, it's only in the past 8,000 or 9,000 or 10,000 years that we don't. So which is the real, which constitutes human nature? You know, it's,
mm-hmm. Well, it certainly is malleable, that's for sure.
Yes, malleable. I think that's the point. You get people reacting to the actual conditions, you know, and perhaps there isn't any such thing as, quote, human nature anyway.
Yeah, that's I think that's really an important point. Maybe there isn't such a thing as human nature because a lot of things get chalked up to it, you know, that are really mysterious, in fact.
Yeah, I'm just extremely hopeful. I think there are so many possibilities, and I just feel like this movement is coming on, and we're going to find out, as Debord said, whether people do want freedom, and I think they do, and I think they want authenticity and fulfillment and all of the things that it's more and more visibly obvious this society just rules out and tramples, and among other things specifically, I see. More and more people talking about and starting to effect in some ways now an alliance between anarchy in the first world and the indigenous resistance movements. And I think there is a connection in terms of primitivist anarchy in particular because we don't have any faith in the technologized forms of existence and we're trying to learn from Native peoples in terms of their reality and their struggles. And you know, if I could just mention one thing that's I think interesting, there was a in May 2001, a CIA report called Global Future 2015, and they're actually this report that was in some papers in Mexico and Spain, parts of it were leaked. It says that the biggest threat to globalization is when the anarchy movement, the protest movement, all this stuff that's starting up and growing, hooks up with the indigenous resistance movements. And I think that's a very hopeful sign. I think that's going to start to happen. And they're right to be afraid of that, because that's part of the developing movement that's going to challenge this whole system of destruction more and more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, sounds good to me. I was wondering what you thought should come next. And you're involved in this newsletter that you just showed me here called Green Anarchy that's put out here in Eugene.
Well, yes, it is. I'm not one of the editors, actually, but there's along with a certain media image of Eugene, there's a whole long list. I wouldn't even have the time here. We're getting close to the end here, but of different projects. But among the projects are various periodicals: Black Clad Messenger, Disorderly Conduct, and certainly Green Anarchy, that a number of people work on and are trying to establish as well. They have been established as a forum, as different ways of furthering the discussion and the dialogue of what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. So that's a direction that you would like to encourage and that you think is important, the connection of activists, left activists, with indigenous people, issues, which are, of course, issues of survival and the earth and the earth that we all live on.
Oh, well, definitely. And this gets past our time here, but I'm not sure the left, I hope the left kind of swings around and starts deepening its critique and its approach, because I don't see them part of it at this point. And, well, this also involves the whole direction of the anarchy movement. But, yeah, I think there's some very strong signs that are pretty clear that this movement is growing, and it's just a very exciting thing to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, John Zerzan, I want to thank you a lot for this interview. And where can your books be gotten? And say the names of them again.
Future Primitive and Elements of Refusal. Well, there, if you see, well, I'm not even sure how to answer that in the best way, but if you see anarchist publications, there's a good chance, perhaps, of being able to order them through there. It's kind of scattered, but you know, distribution and all that is another challenge. But we're trying to get different things out for the availability of people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you very much, John Zerzan. My name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening.